Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Caped Chronicles. This is the premiere episode of the latest show on the Random Chatter Podcast Network. The Caped Chronicles is going to be covering superhero movies, but we'll get to that in a minute. My name is Eric. You probably recognize my voice from some of the other shows on the network. My apologies for that. But I'm going to make it up to you. We have two other hosts that you don't hear on the network very often, and I'm going to introduce them to you today. They are going to be my permanent co-hosts here on the Caped Chronicles. First up, we have Carrie. Carrie, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. My voice is recovering from the apparent plague I've been hit with.
That's good.
Since the beginning of the month. So
that's good.
Yes.
I thought it's very important to start out a brand new podcast series with someone with the sore throat.
With me and my weakened condition?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Well, I figure, you know, if we get to see you at your weakest, then we get to see you later at your strongest, and we become even more impressed with you.
Oh, great. See? That makes sense. Yes.
I don't know. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. For those who don't know, Carrie is our webmaster for randomchatter.com. And I say that in such a way that it probably doesn't seem all that impressive because, you know, we use a WordPress site. So, I mean, come on, how hard can it be? But the reality is Carrie handles so much crap that we throw at her behind the scenes. All kinds of taking care of account management and administrative stuff for not just the network itself, but also for the staff members. We've got what, like 14 staff members now in the network.
Yeah. And when did that happen?
Oh, I don't know. We need to stop. Mike, you're fired.
Oh man. Again,
I know. Again, that's like the fourth time this week. And you haven't even done a podcast yet.
I know.
Anyway. Yeah. Carrie has been really working her butt off for the Random Chatter Network for a long time now. And kind of behind the scenes, she does another podcast. What's the other podcast that you do, Carrie?
The Sci-Fi Pubcast.
All right.
Yes.
And where can people find that? Cause that's not on the Random Chatter Network, but I want to give you guys a plug. So where can they find it?
It's on the When Nerds Attack podcast network. Basically it's a bunch of us sitting around in a virtual bar, drinking and talking about various sci-fi subjects. We just recorded our Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy episode, which will be out sometime in the next week or so.
Nice.
Before Towel Day, so that will be fun.
Covering the book or like all of it?
All of it. Books, the radio shows, the
I
movies,
have to say Marvin is
show.
My spirit animal.
Marvin is awesome.
Yeah. All right. So Carrie is not a newbie at podcasting, though she is making her premiere on this show for the Random Chatter Network. So we're really happy about that. Our other co-host for the show is someone that you may have heard from various other little special events on the network, but this is his first actual show on the Random Chatter Network. In fact, this show, The Caped Chronicles, was his idea. So, Mike, how are you doing tonight?
It's a bird. It's a plane. Nope, it's just me. And I'm glad to be here tonight. Glad to talk about this this topic here. This has been something that's been festering in me for a while, and I just got to get it out. So I'm excited to be here and to join this show.
All right.
And to be a part of the Random Chatter Network.
And you've already got the right spirit of the Random Chatter Network. Instead of saying, there's this spark that's been growing inside of me. You said there's this thing that's been festering inside me, and I've got to get it out. I've got to lance it and let it ooze out like see, you got the right spirit of the network already.
And that was, all Tim's fault.
That's not surprising. All right, so what we're going to do here, this is our first episode of the Caped Chronicles, and I'm going to explain a little bit about the show and a little bit about our background. We've traditionally done kind of an episode zero for other new podcasts, but this one is a little bit different because each episode we're going to be covering something a little bit different. We're going to be covering a different movie. So how we're approaching that movie, what our background and the characters are, that's going to change each episode. So we're not going to get into a whole big, long introduction of ourselves this time around, but we do want to kind of introduce what's going on. So first of all, as I said, this show is going to be covering superhero movies. Now we're going to start with, in this episode, the Superman movie from 1978. And we are slowly going to be working our way forward. For the most part, we are going to be going in chronological release order. There may be an exception here and there, but in general, we're going to be starting with the 1978 Superman going all the way up to, as of today, the Infinity War. As of 5 days from now, Deadpool 2. So we're going to be going in order. We're going to be tackling all of these. And then as new movies come out, we're going to continue to keep up with them. Now, we're going to be doing this as a bi-weekly podcast, meaning every other week we will have a new episode. Our spoiler policy is that if the movie came out in 1978 and you still haven't seen it by now, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Right? So
a little late to the party.
A little bit late. Yeah, by like a few generations.
I live under a rock, seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, as we get closer to today's releases, though, it's going to be a little bit more of an issue. So generally speaking, unless we state otherwise, when we eventually catch up to 2018, if it's been out on DVD for at least a week, it's fair game because you've had a chance to see it in the theaters. You've had a chance to pick it up on DVD or to rent it. When we get to today's movies, I don't know. We might need to make it 2 weeks. We might need to make it a month. I'm not sure exactly how we're going to handle that. But for starters, to kind of just get the ball rolling, our spoiler policy is that if it's been out on DVD for at least a week, it's fair game. All right. Now, each week we're covering a different movie, and some of these movies are things we're really familiar with. Some things we're less familiar with. Some of us are more DC fans. Some of us are more Marvel fans. Some of us are both. So our backgrounds with the individual characters and franchises are going to change from episode to episode. But for the most part, I want to ask you guys one question about your backgrounds. I want to know how you came about being interested in the genre of superheroes at all. And I'll go ahead and start to just kind of get the ball rolling because I'm popping this question on you guys unexpectedly. So this will give you a little bit of a chance to kind of think up an answer. So for me personally, I was not really into comic books when I was a little kid. I grew up in a very conservative household to the point where I think my dad saw some of the drawings of, the muscular men on the covers probably didn't bother him, but the way some of the women were drawn probably decided he didn't want his kid reading these comic books. So I didn't really hit comic books probably until almost college. And then I got into the Avengers and I think I started mainly with the Avengers, eventually into X-Men. And then once I got into comic books, I dove into it full force. But I did keep up with the movies as they came out, and I did see Superman on home video I don't know, when I was a kid. I think probably Tim Burton's Batman is the first superhero movie I really saw in the theaters. And I tried to watch as many of as I could after that, even without being a fan of actual comics. But that's kind of my background with superheroes. They're something that have always interested me just because of their involvement with sci-fi in general. And I've always been a fan. And today I see as many of them as I can. I see all of the spinoffs. I watch the DC animated movies when they come out. I think I'm missing a couple. I even watch the Lego superhero movies. Of course, I've got a kid, so that helps a little bit. As many of the television series as I can, which may come up maybe in a different podcast series coming soon. Two network near you. Oh, that's secret. Okay, never mind.
Uh-oh.
So, Carrie, what is your background with superheroes? When did you discover them? When did you decide that this is something that you're actually a fan of?
So I basically grew up watching mostly sci-fi fantasy stuff. Basically, if it didn't have a sci-fi, still, if it doesn't have a sci-fi or fantasy bent to it, I'd probably lose interest in it pretty quickly. I grew up watching Super Friends, the 60s Batman. It wasn't until when Batman came out, the Tim Burton Batman, that's when I went, ooh, this is the Batman for me. So,
they don't have to all be campy and cheesy.
No, they all have
Wonder Twin powers activate.
No, they can be good.
I love the Wonder Twins. They were awesome.
They were something.
They
were
five, twins. Okay.
Yes.
So yeah, I did. I remember seeing bits and pieces of Superman on cable when it would air. I don't really remember having watched the entire movie until I started having to do homework for this podcast.
Sorry about that.
No, it's fine. Superman 2 is actually used to be my favorite Superman movie until Man of Steel, but we will get into that much later. I did work in a comic book store for about a year and a half.
I'm jealous. You never told me that.
Yeah, I did.
But I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, well, that's not
my
problem.
That doesn't count.
That's not my problem.
Well, no, but.
I worked in a comic book store for about a year and a half, basically around the time Detective Comics 700 came out, and the Wedding of Lois and Superman, the Rebirth of Superman, obviously. I was there when the blue suit debuted, the blue and white suit. That was fun.
That was what, early 90s, right?
Yeah, about 96.
Early to mid 90s?
Yeah. So I got into actually reading comics about then, and I kind of petered off after I left because, well, money and no longer having access to.
Comics are not cheap.
No, they are not.
And DC just raised the prices again, I think. They were $1.99 and now they're raising them to $2.99.
I saw that.
Punks.
Yeah. That's pretty much it. And I try to catch as many of the superhero movies as possible. I'm still mostly a DC junkie, though I do like the Marvel movies. Although, if we stick to our production schedule, we may have enough time for me to get around to rewatching Infinity War and maybe liking it more than I do right now. That's also a topic for another day.
You know, now we actually are going to have a network-wide discussion of Infinity War. We're going to have as many people on the show as we can. I think John from Guardians of the MCU is going to be hosting it.
He's not going to like my answer.
If for some reason you're not able to make that recording, I want to try to get you on the episode we're going to be doing for getting sidetracked. We're going to talk about it because not everybody on the network is all that fond of Infinity War. I enjoyed it, but I have some significant issues with it. Mm. I won't mention Lou's name, but another one of our podcasters has some issues with it too. I don't want to single him out in the air. Mm. I don't think Lou would like that, but not everybody was in love with this movie. So we'll have to get around to talking about that.
I don't dispute that it was a good movie. It was a really good movie. This is the first Marvel movie where I kind of wish I had waited until right before the next one came out, so I can just Avengers 3 and 4 back to back. And
right,
yeah,
I'm sure that'll happen somewhere in a different theater.
You know,
I'm sure it's going to happen.
Oh yeah. Oh, there'll definitely be some big events like that coming up with the Avengers 4. But, you know, you can't have 10 years of films leading into this event and not have people pick it apart.
Right.
I don't think that the people who have issues with it are necessarily inherently being overly nitpicky. You kind of asked us to set our expectations really high for this. You spent 10 years grooming us for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to deal with the fact that, yeah, we're going to take a close look at it. I mean, we just spent 10 years looking forward to it. What'd you expect?
Right.
Yeah, and we got the take in the fact that Ant-Man was better than Infinity War.
I think
I agree. I agree.
Tim, not so much. So another tangent. We'll get back on track here. We, for the people who helped donate to the network, at a certain donation level, we have what we call Random Chatter Theater, which we get together once a month and we watch some sort of a movie together, and through a website that we have set up, and Discord for the audio. And so you get to listen to the staff and the hosts talk in the audio. And then there's also a text-based channel in the website. It's a way to kind of all hang out together, have a shared experience with the audience members, the Patreon donors. And last night, Tim's wife joined us, and we asked her, you know, hey, what'd you think of the Ant-Man? And she said, of what now? There is no Ant-Man. That doesn't exist. The Ant-Man film does not exist. in my reality. Boy. I'm like, wow. I can't wait to talk about that. That's further down the road,
that
though.
That is further down the road.
I'm gonna try not to.
The only thing I will say about Ant-Man at this point in time is that it opened about a week after season two of The Strain started, and suddenly Corey Stoll's hairpiece on The Strain looked really, really fake. That was the only issue I had with Ant-Man.
Okay. You know, I didn't think about this, and I'm just brainstorming as we're recording, which is always a dangerous thing for me to do. But maybe we could do kind of a special edition episode at some point,
giving
our thoughts on the MCU overall up to this point. Maybe not right away. We need to get some episodes in the can first, actually getting the ball rolling. But I think we could maybe come back to that. I mean, we've got decades worth of movies to catch up on here. I think, you know, having one episode where we can kind of get some things off our chest about the MCU might not be the end of the world. We can maybe do that.
I like this idea.
All right, Mike, what is your experience in general with superheroes, and how did you kind of fall into that fandom?
So my first experience with superheroes was Batman, the animated series. That was kind of the first ones. I almost saw reruns because I was still somewhat young when it first came out, and I really wasn't coherent enough to watch it.
To that day, that is such a classic series. It holds up.
It's so good. It really is. To me, it's one of the best ones out there. And I remember watching that, and then I'd be that kid that'd stay up late for what they call that Cartoon Network late at night. What was it called?
Adult Swim.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah, so it was Adult Swim, but it wasn't the adult content kind of cartoons they have now. It was like the Super Friends with the Legion of Doom coming out of the swamp and the Jabberjaw ones. And I would watch those kind of shows when all my parents went to sleep, and then I would sneak into my dad's DVD cabinet and get like his superhero movies, because he had the Tim Burton Batman movie, and that was the first live action Batman I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I remember watching that late at night as a kid, and that really hooked me in. And so that's, you know, I'm a DC advocate. I do know they make some clunk movies as well, and I will call those clunk movies out. I have no problem doing that. But I do like Marvel. My introduction to Marvel was actually X-Men. The X-Men animated series. That's kind of how I got introduced into Marvel. And then I kind of grew up along the lines when X-Men Evolution was really big. And I thoroughly enjoyed X-Men Evolution. I don't know why. I really enjoyed that one.
It wasn't bad.
And
I like that one too.
I've seen parts of it.
I think my first – I know this sounds weird, and this is going to make a couple of the MCU people happy. My first superhero movie I actually saw in theaters was Iron Man.
Yeah,
when it first came out, that was the first one that I can recall seeing in a theater. Every other one, I would borrow movies from people just to watch, and I don't really have any experience in the comic books. I've read a couple of them. My dad had a box, and I would sneak up into the attic and grab the box, and they were from 70s and 80s and that kind of thing, comics, and
yeah.
They were kind of hit and miss ones. They weren't the storylines. I'd watch them and look at the pictures and read what I could read and figure out what was going on. And but anything I want to know now, usually I pick from the internet. It's got it on there, and I'm sure I can find it somewhere. So that's my experience with superheroes was Batman.
Okay, so that's good. So what we've got here, we've got a little bit of differences in the background and where we're coming from. We've got Mike, you're of a younger generation than Carrie and I are. You did not necessarily have a strong comic book background, but you did with animated television and, of course, with the movies. Carrie and I have a little bit more into – I have enough in comic books that I'm going to spout information off here and there, and Carrie has enough that she's going to say, Eric, dude, I worked in a comic book store, and you don't know what the heck you're talking about. So Carrie's going to get to correct me on a lot of things, and that's good.
I probably won't get to correct you on that much. Like, it was more than a decade ago, dude.
Yeah, it's been more than a decade since I've been able to afford comics myself. I mean, recently, and by that I mean like the last month or so, I've been trying to get back into them. Amazon every now and then has deals where you can get graphic novels for 99 cents if you're okay with getting the digital versions of them, which I am. I've got an iPad. And now you've got the Marvel Comics Unlimited, which is kind of like a Netflix for comic books. I wish DC would do the same thing.
But I mean, But yeah, my like Batman's my jam. Batman's I don't know a lot about him in the comics, but Batman's my jam.
Awesome.
And I mean, until I discovered he didn't really have superpowers, he just has a lot of money.
Hey, I want that superpower. That superpower is the best one.
Go Justice League movie. I love it.
Yes.
Yes, I too am a big Batman fan. But alas, this week we are talking about Superman.
Woo.
So let's we'll go ahead and get into the episode here. Now, we're already about 20 minutes into this episode. So this episode's going to run a little bit longer because we just had to do that introduction. We're generally going to try to keep the episodes to about an hour apiece. So bear with us. What we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about the film itself, like a brief summary, the cast and crew, how it did at the box office, some other technical notes, and then we're going to get into the discussion. And the discussion we're going to be talking about, there are some similarities with all comic book movies or all superhero movies. There are a lot of origin stories, so we're going to discuss whether or not the origin story itself works, whether the introduction to this character is a good introduction or not. They all have villains. And, you know, I've been saying for years now, a hero is only as interesting as its villain is powerful or its villain is a threat. So does it have a compelling villain? And then how is the storytelling of the film overall just as a film? And then for the older stuff, we're going to mention whether or not we thought it aged well. And, you know, we'll talk about some of the pros and cons. But then after we get that stuff out of the way, we're going to delve into actual discussion topics that are unique to that movie. So that's basically going to be the overall format for these episodes. So first of all, we're going to talk about the film. This is the Superman, or also known as Superman colon the movie from 1978.
No one cares.
The summary.
Oh, wait, sorry. just when I think I've got that song out of my system.
Oh, boy. You know, the summary is the only thing I didn't have here in the show notes. I guess the summary, it's basically, it's the origin of Superman, right? I mean, Mike, is there...
Well, there is a film synopsis, and it's actually the best I could find.
Okay, go for it.
It says, just before the destruction of the planet Krypton, scientist Jor-El sends his infant son, Kal-El, on a spaceship to Earth. Raised by kindly farmers Jonathan and Martha Kent, young Clark discovers the source of his superhuman powers and moves to Metropolis to fight evil after 12 years. Spoiler. As Superman, he battles the villainous Lex Luthor, while as novice reporter Clark Kent, he attempts to woo co-worker Lois Lane.
I mean, the synopsis basically just spoiled the whole movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's not like we didn't all see it coming. I mean, it's, you know,
well, okay, but,
it's the standard Superman.
It's Superman.
Story.
Okay, the synopsis it's standard.
That does leave out the whole trial of Zod at the very, very beginning.
Yeah, so I have an issue about that.
Listen, I know that DC has not done very good historically with trying to emulate Marvel's successes. And one thing Marvel has been, they didn't introduce this by any stretch of the imagination, but something that Marvel has become known for are the post-credit scenes. And right off the bat, the first superhero movie, the first big DC movie we have, they accidentally put the post-credit scenes at the opening of the film.
To set you up for number two.
To set you up for Superman 2. They set you up for Superman 2 before we even open Superman 1.
Exactly.
What the heck? You're doing it wrong.
They were very proud of their work. They knew they were going to get a second one.
Oh.
But I mean, all right. Well, come on, you have tear stamp right at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, nope.
Yep.
He's been thrown into a glass, pane of glass.
Yeah.
A plane. I don't know. There's a joke there somewhere. I can't find it.
Floating two-dimensional diamond in the sky. There's some dark reference there, I'm sure.
Cast and crew. We've got, this is directed by Richard Donner, who's also known for a lot of movies through the 80s. My favorites being Lethal Weapon and The Goonies.
Hey.
Love The Goonies.
I love Lethal Weapon.
Yeah, well,
in case you hadn't figured that out.
You know, and I like the first two Lethal Weapon movies, too. That was a good reflection of Superman. The first two are good. Oh. The ones after that, not so much. Same with Lethal Weapon.
The last two Lethal Weapons were okay. I think it's the fourth one that Jet Li was in, which was the reason I saw it.
It wasn't good though.
Yeah,
well, the second one to me was the best.
Oh yes, I agree.
Yeah, definitely. Joe Pesci really helped that out quite a bit.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so back to this. And see, this is the other thing too. This is our first episode. We'll find a kind of a rhythm and a pattern as we go along, and we will probably have fewer tangents, we hope, but bear with us. So actors in this, Christopher Reeve, of course, is the iconic Superman. Yep. I mean, he really defined the role. He was the first. As far as movies go, he was the first real superhero. I mean, yeah you had others that, in, you know, Adam West as Batman from the TV series and stuff like that. But this was like the first big box office blockbuster superhero.
Right.
We had Margot Kidder as Lois, Gene Hackman as arguably the best Lex Luthor so far.
Agreed, although I kind of had this issue with, you know, him having to announce all the time that he was a supervillain. It's like, really?
See, I rather enjoyed that.
But 1978, like,
that's comic book style. It's like, hey, I'm the villain. You know, it's
there is that whole kind of, you've got the James Bond thing too, where you kind of explain to the superhero for 20 minutes, you know. You're going to be dangling over this pit of sharks with you know, laser beams and machine guns. And I'm just going to
escape,
leave and not sit here and watch and confirm you're dead. And who else do we have? Ned Beatty as Otis, Marlon Brando as Jor-El, which worked. I think this was a little bit before Marlon Brando got really weird.
Yep.
I think I was too young to appreciate the fact that that Marlon Brando was in this when I first saw the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never really learned that Marlon Brando was a thing until after all of his movies were so old that I had no interest in seeing any of them.
Yeah.
So, all right, so some technical information here. The box office stuff.
Now, you mentioned the composer was John Williams, which he's also famous for, as we know, Star Wars.
E.T. Oh, well, yeah, that too.
And who cannot forget, I love the theme for the Superman movie. It's just something about it still, to me, the best superhero theme.
You know, as I was rewatching it,
the Avengers theme.
The one thing that really, I think, solidified this as a memorable theme was the fact that they hammered it into your brain over and over. Like every scene where he's in the air, every scene where he lands, every scene where he takes off, da 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 da. Like just that one little clip there, just over and over and over again. But it worked. Hey, here we are decades later. And if you hear it, you immediately know, oh, that's the John Williams theme for Superman from back in the late 70s. Like, you just know.
And plus the fact that they've managed to work it into pretty much everything involving Superman in the last two decades. I mean, they worked it into Smallville. They worked it into Justice League. They worked it into Krypton.
Right. But why do they do that? Because it succeeded.
Because they can.
Yes, because it worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it gets you amped up. I mean, there's something about it. Just gets you just pumped up. I mean, I used it yesterday to move furniture around my house. I had to play it and I got some energy and I just started moving furniture.
But it's something that John Williams excels at, is that punch, that orchestral, you know, that moment. So, so this is, and keep in mind, this is 1978. Star Wars came out in 1977. I mean, John Williams was having a pretty good couple of years there. So,
Definitely.
Yeah. All right. So box office information, the runtime of the movie when it first came out was an hour and 43 minutes. So it was a little over 2 hours long, which to my recollection back then, that was pretty long. Now that was a theatrical release. There was also a 1980s video release that was a little shorter. I don't know what was cut. A 2000 restoration that was longer. And then the extended cut, which was an hour and 88 minutes. And I think that might've been what I just got done watching. And boy, did that feel long.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, it did.
Wow, was that long. It was rated PG for peril, mild sensuality, and language. Mild sensuality. Like, maybe by the late 70s standards, but by today's standards,
no.
This would be like a G plus, I think.
And peril, too. So, I mean, I didn't.
Peril, like.
Lots of peril.
Ooh, someone is flailing wildly and unrealistically falling against a blue screen. And yeah.
Yeah.
The release date, December 15th, 1978. The budget was about $55 million, which at that time was that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big budget. Opening weekend domestic here in the United States was almost $7.5 million.
Almost beat Avengers Infinity War opening weekend.
Yeah, almost. So close. Now, I understand the importance of adjusting for inflation. I just never feel like doing the math. So that's not something we're probably going to care about too much on this show. The worldwide gross in the theatrical release was apparently $166 million. But the lifetime gross, and I don't know what this accounts for necessarily, this is according to Box Office Mojo, was a little over $300 million. I don't know if that is adjusted or if that's also with home video release or what it includes.
And that's very successful for that time. It
really
is.
Big time. I mean, that's successful for now.
Right.
Really, when you think about it, the average movie, when it comes out in its opening weekend, if it's considered a success and it opens at number one and it's not a tentpole film, I mean, we're talking between $30 million and $50 million opening weekend, and it might bring in a total domestically anyway of, you know, $100 million is pretty good, $150 million maybe. I mean, a lot of the production costs are made up on home video release. So for this to do that back in the late 70s, you adjust for inflation, that's really good. Now, the Rotten Tomato score for this is 94%.
And can I just throw this out there, since you decided to bring that up too? Infinity War only has an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow. You know what, though? I may have to put Infinity War over this. We'll get to that in a few minutes.
Yeah.
Other notes real quick. Again, this was released 1 year after Star Wars. So one thing that really stood out to me for that was the difference in special effects. Though to its credit, I have to say that now with the special editions of Star Wars, and even before the special editions, you had the THX re-release on VHS. Like, they've been polishing Star Wars over and over again over the years. This, not so much. So you have to be a little bit forgiving of it. It was nominated for 3 Oscars, Best Sound, Best Film Editing, and Best Music for the original score. At the time, this was the most expensive film to date, which kind of surprises me regarding Star Wars, but I know with Star Wars, they kind of scraped and cut costs as much as they were able to.
Yeah.
It was inducted into the Library of Congress's National Film Registry in 2017. And it was not the highest grossing film of 1978. It was the second highest grossing. Highest grossing was, I don't want to say this. The highest grossing movie was Grease. I hate Grease.
I watched the crap out of that.
When I was in high school, I ran the soundboard for our show choir, which these days would be kind of known as a glee club, I guess. And they did a production of Grease, and I will never get those songs out of my head. And I've tried to with a power drill with everything. I can't do it. Anyway, at the time it became the 6th highest grossing film of all time. So
good.
I'm a little curious about adjusting for inflation, but so let's get into the discussion. So I want to know from you guys, what is your opinion of Superman as a character? How much do you care about Superman going into this? I will say, and it's a little hard because like I saw this movie as a kid. So my opinion of Superman was actually based a lot on my opinion of this film and the following films, but I never really got into Superman that much. I always saw him as being too overpowered. I saw him as, I mean, his powers, he can see through anything. He can shoot laser beams out of his eyes, ice cold breath out of his mouth. He can fly. He's got super speed. He's got super strength. He's invulnerable. Like he can pretty much do it. The only thing he doesn't have is telekinesis and telepathy. And otherwise, I mean, he can basically do just about everything. His weakness are rocks from a planet that, according to this extended edition of the film, is six galaxies away. And you have to get close enough to him to expose it to him in order for it to hurt him. And then basically he just rolls around the floor for a few minutes and till somebody kicks the rock out of the way. And then he comes and beats you
up.
Or
you just hide in a lead box.
Right. Right. Now in the comic books, they also introduced magic as another thing that he can't really fight against. So that was good that at least that they gave him another weakness, because I think he was too crazy overpowered. And so that's, I think, probably one of the reasons that I never really got into Superman, between the Boy Scout image and the, you know, he doesn't ever have to make any difficult moral decisions. He just always knows what to do all the time. When does that happen in life?
And he never lies.
And he never lies. He never does anything wrong, effectively. And I'm just like, I can't relate to that guy. But what about you guys? What, Carrie, what's your approach to Superman as a character?
He's fine. Like I'm more on the Batman side. Like if you have to make me choose a side, in the DC universe, I will always choose Batman over Superman. But I mean, I don't hate Superman. I will watch a Superman movie if it's on. I actually rewatched Man of Steel just recently, so I'm less interested in Superman as a character than I am as in other characters in the DC universe. But I understand his place in comic book lore in general and in DC in particular. So,
okay. Mike, what about you?
Well, I think Superman had his place. Like Carrie said, back in the time he was, that's what people looked at a superhero, was somebody who had every power possible to an extent. And like you said, besides Krypton, lead, and even, spoiler warning right now, if you've never seen Young Justice, turn it off for like 5 seconds. They introduced magic as a weakness to Superboy, yeah, which in general we know was affected from Superman. But my problem with Superman growing up, now my brother loved Superman and I loved Batman, so it was kind of funny that we were both on opposite sides of this. I always felt kind of like you. There was, if he had a superpower, he had it. If there was one out there, I feel like if he didn't have it and there was an enemy he was coming up against, he would find some new power that he never knew he had to defeat this enemy. And I always feel like that made him unbeatable, unless you had rocks. And that's what kind of bothered me about Superman. Now, I didn't see this movie until much later, but my perception of Superman came from the Justice League cartoon and Justice League Unlimited and those ones. And even in that one, I couldn't stand him, because it almost had this arrogant pride to him in those series. Now, I don't mind Superman. I understand where he's coming from. But when I look at a superhero, I want somebody who is real. Mm-hmm. Who goes through real problems, who goes through – now, I understand Jonathan Kent, spoiler again, if you've never seen – if you don't know what happens to Superman, his father on Earth passes away.
That's a theme on pretty much all Superman movies.
Right. But you actually see Batman dealing with the effects of that.
Right.
You see Bruce Wayne dealing with that. Mm-hmm. You know, you see Barry Allen as the Flash. You know, you see him dealing with the fact that his father's in prison. Mm-hmm. You see real superheroes. When it comes to Clark Kent, you see a reporter and a hero who can do anything. So do I mind Superman? No. Is he my favorite? Not at all. But I don't mind him when it's done right, when the history is done right.
Yeah. There are two things, I think, two times I've seen Superman done really well where I started to like the character. One is anytime he's together with Batman.
Yes.
Yep.
And there was a really good Batman comic book series. I never did get to finish it. I started to go back and look to see if I could find it and pick it up again. And it was Batman and Superman together. It was basically like the Batman logo with the Superman crest in the middle section, like the body of the bat.
I remember picking up a couple of those. Yeah.
They were really good. I forget who wrote them. I don't know if it was Morrison or who, but you got the inner monologue for both characters going through these panels. And as they're fighting or doing whatever they're doing, you're seeing these text blocks in the same panels where in one you're getting Superman's internal monologue and one you're getting Batman. And it was really interesting. Batman kind of kept Superman grounded in reality. And then Superman kind of kept Batman on track morally. And they really played off of each other really well. And so I started to appreciate Superman a little bit better there, because you could kind of see ways in which Superman did have some failings and did have some weaknesses in the sense that, you know, his inability to relate to the rest of us and vice versa was a weakness and it got addressed. And the other time, and I know there are problems with the Zack Snyder Superman movies, but the one thing he did right is he created some moral dilemmas for the character. He created situations where the character didn't know what the right thing was to do and really had to struggle through things. And I think that in Batman versus, excuse me, BVS or, you know, Batman v Superman, however you want to stupid way of titling that. But when Bruce Wayne points out that, you know, you've never known fear. You've never had to make a sacrifice, you know, his father's death aside, but even that wasn't a sacrifice he made for the greater good. Superman's never really truly known fear. And how are you a hero? Being a hero, in my opinion, to oversimplify it, is when you are willing to make a personal sacrifice that is going to be very, very painful to you on a personal level for the sake of other people, whether it's for the sake of one other person, a community, the greater good, whatever it is, you're willing to make that sacrifice no matter what it's going to cost you. And it almost certainly will cost you something, but you're going to do it anyway because it's the right thing to do for the sake of these other people. Superman does the right thing to help other people, but there's no sacrifice involved. He there's no cost for him. There's right. No fear he has to overcome. There's no bravery or valor because he doesn't have to be brave. Bravery is what you do in spite of being afraid. It's what you do in the face of fear. Superman's never known that. So that was something where I think Zack Snyder kind of got it right.
Yeah, and I will say that I like Superman best when he is allowed to let loose, as it were, like when he gets to fight someone like Steppenwolf or Darkseid or even Zod, when he has someone who's equal or maybe a little more powerful than he is, to that he can just, you know, go to town on.
Well, you know, I do agree with you, Eric, that I do like the Zack Snyder format where he gives Superman the moral dilemma. My only issue with, and we'll get into this when we hit the DCEU later on after a while, is that it almost felt like everything revolves around Superman and his story.
Especially in Justice League.
Right, and just saying like, well, we can't do anything unless we have Superman. Well, yes, you can. There are other heroes you could have got or whatever, but it just felt like, and even in the Justice League cartoons and in everything else, it felt like he was the leader, and it's always felt like him and Batman were by fighting for that position, and it just felt like without Superman, everything falls apart.
And
he's the moral center of the Justice League, basically.
Right. But I like the fact that Zack Snyder, some people say, well, I'd rather have Joss Whedon. You know, that's their opinion. I'd rather have Zack Snyder because he does put those heroes in positions where they have to face their own morality. They have to make those difficult decisions that they wouldn't do otherwise.
Right. Well, I agree with you on that, other than the fact that then I think the Zack Snyder films were flawed seriously in some other ways. So he did some things that nobody else did correctly, but then I think he kind of shot himself in the foot in some other areas too. But we're, oh, I can't wait to discuss those.
All right, next topic.
Yeah, so coming back to the 1978 Superman film though, this is obviously an origin story. And I think that as an origin story, as an introduction to this character, it worked pretty well, right? I mean, we got Kal-El's evacuation from Krypton. Other than the pacing of those scenes maybe taking a little bit too long, especially in the extended edition, the setup worked, the story worked. We understood what was going on. We understood what gave Superman his powers. Understood a little bit of where he was coming from as a character, having been raised in a farm in rural Midwest America, you know, the old fashioned values and all that. I think it kind of worked. And then when Clark Kent became Superman, you know, we got a kind of a montage of him running around getting kittens out of trees and helicopters off of buildings and stuff like that. Right. I mean, it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it worked. I think it worked. I enjoyed the Krypton part where we saw that. I have my issues with a couple things in on the Krypton scene, but we can get into that later if we need to. I think it worked good. And I've always been a sucker for origin stories. And I love this as an origin story for him. I think it introduced a hero that some people may have read in comics, some people may not have. And I think it introduces something so everybody's on the same playing field. This is where Superman comes from. This is why he's got what he's got. This is who he is. So I thought it was a very good origin story.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the villain? Carrie, what did you think of Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor? Because this is another, especially for origin stories, a lot of times we get so much origin that we don't get much villain, or we get so much villain that we never really learn much about the character of the superhero. What did you think of the balance between the two, and then Gene Hackman as Luthor in general?
I really like Gene Hackman as Luthor, other than, as I said before, the very, very late 70s, early 80s. I'm the super villain here. I'm the one who needs to be. I have this big master plot, and oh wait, there's now this guy who might be able to stop me. Hey, let's get him out of the way first. I thought it was kind of weird that he probably could have he probably could have gone forward with his plot without even letting Superman know what was going on.
I think he just kept his mouth shut.
Yeah, exactly. If he had just, kept to the plan.
Again, 1978. I keep coming back to.
Yeah,
I guess,
it's a very late 70s, early 80s villain, but it works.
Yeah.
But I was okay with it and I liked him as Luthor, because to me, Lex Luthor was one of those people, and I know we'll probably talk about it here after a while as well, but Lex Luthor was one of those people that he may not have been as strong as Superman, but he had the intellect and the manipulation over Superman to make him a compelling villain against him.
Right.
And I thought that was always good. Kind of like the Joker. We know, of course, there's some debate. He's got powers too, whatever, but Joker was always a great villain against Batman, because you can't have one without the other. And I feel like that's with Luthor. Some people say, you know, Doomsday. I think it's Luthor and Superman.
This is the Lex Luthor that would have gotten elected president in the DC universe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
as long as he wore the wig.
As long as, no, he got elected president without the wig.
Okay. Yeah.
Because he was elected Gene president Hackman back in the 90s.
Yeah.
He was so good because he was so arrogant by calling Superman to his lair.
Right.
That I can beat this guy when he gets here.
But you believed that he was capable of outsmarting Superman. That's the thing about Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor. He pulled it off because Gene Hackman's presence on screen is really strong. And you believed that he was that intelligent. You believed that he had a plan that could work. You never believed it would work because it's a Superman movie. Now, obviously the good guy's going to win at the end, but you believed that this was a feasible, viable plan. And therefore Lex was a legitimate threat. And I think a lot of that, part of it was the writing, but I think part of it also was the way that Gene Hackman communicated that level of competency about Lex Luthor. The portrayal was spot on.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
You believed that out of Gene Hackman. So
he was good.
Now, the storytelling over as a movie, okay, because that's the other thing. I mean, we're talking about superhero films primarily out of love for superheroes, but we also love films. So just as a film itself, how did this work? I just watched the special edition, the extended cut, which obviously had a lot more stuff in it than the theatrical release. So for me to complain about the pacing is kind of like, well, I made my bed, now I got to sleep in it. I watched the extended version. It's my own fault.
Well, but I've seen the actual 1980 video of it. My parents actually had the VHS when they had the VHS of it. And I would watch it, and it still felt slow.
Yeah.
I mean, regardless of what one you are, it felt slow. It felt like drawn out. Like they could have... You know, and I've seen movies where it's superhero movies where it's fast, but then I've seen some where it's just, all right, come on, you got to move on. You're doing too much in this thing. Just keep going. We understand what's going on. It's almost as like they played the audience was dumb, but they just wanted to keep feeding you the stuff to keep you going.
I wouldn't say that they played the audience as dumb. It almost looked like they were showing off a bit too much. Like, hey, this is what we can do with this now.
And we have a big budget, so we can do
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And to be fair, we hadn't seen this sort of thing before. So the showing off thing is maybe not that bad a thing. I mean, it really did get a lot of attention for the film, and it might have been a smart way to go. But I think, Carrie, that's a really good way to put it. It was kind of a showing off sort of thing. A little bit of context for the extended version. And then again, to be fair, that's not the theatrical cut. The first 20 minutes or so was him... Like at the 20-minute point, he was just leaving Krypton. That's a long time. Now, here's the other thing. You think about scenes in a movie, and you know, I say something lasted 3 or 4 minutes. That doesn't seem like a long time, unless you're watching a movie. And then you're talking about some cuts last 3 seconds, some cuts last 6 seconds. I mean, you're talking seconds, not minutes, for the way you edit a film. Well, actually, talk frames, which, you know, 30 frames in a second, even, but. Point is, 20 minutes before he gets off Krypton, then there's another like 4.5 minutes of watching people on Krypton die. Falling down into these fissures and the camera spinning, and you can't even tell what direction people fall. And then, of course, the whole planet explodes like the Death Star at the end anyway. So the whole people falling and getting impaled on things is kind of a moot point because the whole thing just blows up. And there's a whole like elementary school physics questions I have there, but that's that's a different thing. So then we don't actually get to see Superman doing anything Superman-y until about like an hour and a half into the film, and then it's the kind of the montage of, you know, the helicopter thing, the saving the kitten from the tree. You know, it takes a while and then the flight scene with Lois
was very long. Very long.
So yes,
long. So long and painful.
And I read that they had used 3 different types of machines and rigs to get him to fly for just all that thing. They had used pulleys, they used people, they used the blue screen, they used it suspension. I mean, it was
I believe it.
They used a bunch of things to get him.
But to be fair, for 1978, it looked good. They did a better job with that than some movies even that came out after 1978. So,
yeah.
Also, to be fair, I think in Man of Steel, they spent about 20 minutes on Krypton. So, it
really?
There is a pattern there.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got my issues with the scenes of Krypton in this movie. I guess we'll get to that here after a while, but some things that kind of bother me about that.
How about how well the movie aged? I got to say, when we were talking about doing this podcast series, we didn't point this out either. So the four of the first five movies chronologically are Superman movies. And Superman 3 and 4 kind of sucked. I mean, let's face it, they were not good movies, right?
Dumpster fires.
I've only seen bits and pieces of 3 and 4, so I can't comment.
Well, Donner left after 2. Actually, he didn't even actually finish all of 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's something I didn't know. I think he finished about 75 or 80% of 2. And
so still a good portion of it.
And that's why it was kind of felt choppy in number 2, because I don't think they just kind of wrapped it up.
Okay, that would explain some things. Okay, so, but we're going to combine, because we want to get into some other non-Superman movies too, we're going to combine 3 and 4 and maybe even bring that into the episode where we discuss Superman 2. We're still talking behind the scenes about how we want to wrap those things up. But so when we were talking about doing this podcast, I was really excited, except I'm like, man, but we got to start with Superman. That's so horrible. But I have to say, as I'm watching it, it aged better than I expected it to. It was not nearly as bad. And even the pacing issues, I'm like, okay, well, I remember that it wasn't this long the first time I saw it. This is the extended cut. And for the 70s, this was kind of what you did. You know, I can kind of see them wanting to do the whole Superman and Lois having a relationship thing, and then it plays off with the Clark and Lois thing not really working out. So I get it. It wasn't as bad as I thought. What did you guys think about watching it now in 2018?
It was better than I remembered it being, or it's about as good as I remember it being. But it does age relatively well, as opposed to some other movies I've seen from, you know, the 70s and 80s. But there are a few things that are just so iconically of that time. It's just like,
there were some other things about the movie that I think probably wouldn't fly in today's social context, but and as far as the storytelling goes, I think, again, it aged pretty well. I think you could watch this in 2018 and enjoy it. In a lot of old movies, you can't. So that was good.
I did like the way Christopher Reeve, you know, kind of went back and forth between being Clark and being Superman. Like as soon as Lois was out of the picture, he dropped the whole bumbling idiot act, and he's just like kind of cool and collected. But everything you said, Eric.
Yeah, let's talk about the pros and cons a little bit. I think that dichotomy between Clark and Superman was one of the stronger aspects of this movie. In fact, to the point where it's not done as much now, and I understand it was a little over the top, and part of that's the time period as well. But even now, if you look at the more modern tellings of Superman, that dichotomy is not as strong. And I think that they nailed that. That was really good.
Yeah,
I think they did a really good job. I'm glad that they did a good job at distinguishing who was who. And I always like those little smirks, like after he drops her back off at her apartment, which I don't see how she afforded. What was she doing? But he dropped her off at the apartment, and she goes to leave the apartment, and she's still bumbling, clumsy. They're trying to get him to, you know, he's taking her out for something to eat or something to drink, and he kind of looks back into the apartment, kind of gives that little smirk like, yep, she has no idea.
Yeah. Speaking of Lois, how is it that a well-respected journalist, and she seems to do pretty well for herself. I mean, we talked about, you mentioned the apartment just now, but I mean, at work, she seems to be pretty well-respected. How does a professional journalist not know spelling at like a middle school level?
Especially in like the 70s, when you don't have the benefit of autocorrect. I mean, seriously.
Right. And you would think, oh, well, you know, autocorrect would make it easier. It'd be harder back then. No, it wasn't harder because you had to know, like, you learned it in school.
Exactly.
They taught it in school.
Yeah.
She writes, I don't... as a job, as a profession. She had to, so bloodletting. How many T's in bloodletting? Well, it's the word letting. It's blood, and then it's letting. Letting is a very, very common English word.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, yeah. Then there's no T in brazier. Well, no, because phonics, like, you don't have to tell people that my son doesn't know what a brassiere is, and yet he would know there's no letter T in it. He's 9 years old. How do you have to tell a grown woman that there's no T? Like, I just.
And I almost got the impression from the first time when you see her when she's about eight, and she's on the train with her parents, that she almost grew up, it seemed like, in a, I don't want to say a rich, but upper middle class,
affluent,
where she could have the money. They could send her to a good education over what a probably normal education was. She's not like a sixth grade
dropout or something.
Right.
Well, I know they go back and forth with it in the comics and some of the television shows that she's actually an army brat. So her, like, depending on which version of Superman you're watching, her father is like a four-star general. I know they addressed that, so he still had money. Yeah, they still had money.
Well, Ed, you know what? Most army brats that I know, their parents were pretty strict about making sure you did your homework and you got good grades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More so than all the other parents. Because they were strict about everything more so than all the other parents. So even that, I don't know. The helicopter scene, since we're on the topic of cons, in pros and cons, the helicopter scene. So you've got a helicopter with a broken stabilizer. And it is about 5 or 6 feet off of the helipad. And it is slowly rotating around. Why don't you just reduce the speed of the throttle and just let it ease down onto the ground? Yeah, it's going to scrape a little bit. It might tip, but you're down and you're safe, and it's 5 feet. You could have opened the doors and Lois could have jumped out at that point and been fine. And again, 1978.
Or you could have just had Captain America grab it just to flex his muscles on the helipad.
Hey, no crossing streams here, Mike.
Yeah, no crossing the streams. I think that's going to be our stay on topic thing here. No crossing the streams. But yeah, it's you know, I understand they had to do it, but you know, let's get to the discussion topic. We were trying to come up with things unique to this movie that really deserve discussing. And I hate to say that the one thing that we found was a big negative, because really this movie's not that bad. Mm-hmm. It's not nearly as much a mess as I remember it being. Like, I feel guilty about having dreaded watching this film. It's really not that bad. Except our discussion topic, that, and we're actually running a little long in the episode here, but the time travel scene. And for all of the things that I didn't remember about this movie, the one thing that's always stuck out with me about this film for decades, because now it has become a part of, you know what Superman can't do? He can't just spin around the planet in the opposite direction and reverse time. Like, that was the most ridiculous.
Yeah.
Nonsense. Even as a little kid, I knew that, like, whoever wrote that really didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah, I
agree. It's so many flaws in this argument. I mean, you got the first flaw that I can think of is you completely mess up the Earth's ecosystem.
Yeah, die. Like,
everything dies.
Yes. You kill, like, the molten lava inside the Earth's core gets messed up, let alone the, you know, jet streams, and everything about the ecosystem is just gone. The planet's dead. You've killed humanity. Period. Right?
Oh, I mean, that's... And plus,
I mean, doesn't... If you reverse time like that, doesn't that reverse everything? Like, doesn't that bring back the rockets that he just destroyed?
That too!
Yes.
And, like, aside from the fact that that doesn't actually reverse time, and instead it just kills all life everywhere, not even just humans, but, like, all life. But yes, even if it did work...
And it saves California from breaking off of the continent. That's one thing. It's like, that. Why does everyone think that California is going to break itself off of the continent? That's a theme in Superman.
Well, Carrie, I can explain that
in Star Trek.
I know you're in denial because you live in California, but let me explain. Because
Superman's not there to push dirt back up.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If I grab this one rock here with my two hands, Then the entire coastline
is going to fall into the ocean. No, I don't think
so. But that's right. Like, there's rockets and the coastline falling off and all of this stuff that he's fixing miraculously somehow, which is a whole nother thing. But Lois dies. So let's turn back time and save Lois. But
what happened to everything else?
What happened to the rockets? What happened to all of the things that you just corrected? Like,
what happened to the little fake, you know, model houses that you saved when the dam busted?
Right. Right. That poor kid's science project with all the little model houses is gone.
Oh, old school effects.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just reversing. You know.
It's about the story. It's not
so one thing that kind of hits me is, now I like the Flash too. I really love the Flash. I don't know why.
Okay.
Just something about, I guess I love his goofiness. So we all know in Flash, if you don't know Flashpoint, then turn your mics off or turn your headphones off for a second here. But in Flashpoint, Barry Allen goes back in the past, saves his mom from ever being killed. His dad never goes to prison. And when he gets back to his timeline, everything is completely altered. I mean, Bruce Wayne is no longer Batman. It's his dad now. Let's see. It's just completely, everything is completely different. And in one version, I believe, Carrie, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't his mom become the Joker when he comes back?
I'm not familiar with the Flashpoint storyline in the comics. I know the only version of Flashpoint I've really seen is the CW version, which I know is different from what happened in the comics.
Yeah.
And
you need to check out the animated one.
Yes. I remember, not that Flashpoint, but I remember they did a version of it on Justice League Unlimited. And I don't remember what all they changed with that.
Hmm. Well, I know they did the Flashpoint Paradox was really good.
Yeah. The movie, the animated movie.
I need to see that still.
But back to my thoughts. So if Barry Allen could go back and change and alter everything, how long of a time jump do you have to do in a way? Because that's what he did. He went back in time and fixed something just to save the woman he loved.
Right.
All right. So how much in time do you have to go before you alter the future?
Like, 5 days.
Like Flashpoint. And I understand he went back years in Flashpoint. But in this movie, he went back a few minutes.
So you can argue that anything we do right now changes the future, and we just don't notice it because we haven't observed the future. So if you're only observing the outcome of an event for a few minutes and you go back in time and change that, then the butterfly effect still happens. You're just not seeing too far outward as far as what that effect is going to be down the road. So you're not seeing a drastic change because you never saw years and years and years down the road in one direction to now know how different this other direction years and years and years down the road is, because you're only observing a few minutes.
Right.
So I think the question is more that, so to answer your question, any time traveling back in time 5 seconds, in theory, if you go with the butterfly effect, can have drastic effects on the future. It's just you're not noticing it. So what we saw with Barry Allen is we saw an entire lifetime of changes, and with Superman we only noticed a little bit. If he had left things alone and, you know, the California broke off into the ocean and stuff like that, the future would be radically different. We just didn't get that far into the movie because the movie is only 2.5 hours.
So Superman 4 would have been a better movie if he had Much just let better. Everything happen. Yes.
Hollywood would have been dead and there would have been no Superman 4. So it, by definition, it would have been better. No offense, Gary.
But
we would have evacuated you.
But yeah, that time travel scene just really just...
Oh, it's horrible.
And then he spins the other way to get the Earth back to...
Right. How did he know how far back he needed to get? It's like, oh, this is far enough, I think. Okay, let's turn it around.
He had 12 years of training.
Oh my gosh.
In the Fortress of Solitude.
I'm a big time travel fan. Big time. I love time travel movies. This is the single worst time travel ever done. I mean, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is way, way better and more accurate.
Yeah.
Than this. This is like, this is bad. This is the absolute low of time travel stories. So,
fortunately, it's only about 20 minutes of time travel as opposed to, you know, years.
Right. Fortunately, the rest of the movie, there are so many other solid moments in the movie that this doesn't kill the film, which is ironic because this is basically the big climax, right? This is the big conflict. And yet, despite it sucking this bad, it doesn't actually kill the film. The rest of the film is good because it's about the character. It's about the development and the origin story, the relationship with Lois. You know, there are enough layers of foundation for the character in this film that you can kind of forget. Well, no, you can't forgive the time travel scene. I think you can just overlook it.
Well, this was actually, this may be actually interesting here to think about, but the Superman 1 and 2 were both filmed at the same time. And because they were filmed at the same time, they had pulled the ending scene from Superman 2 and stuck it to make it the ending scene of Superman 1.
I did not know that.
Yes.
That also explains the post-credit scene.
Right.
That they messed up so bad by putting it at the beginning of the movie.
Right. So they it's that could explain why it just felt awkward at this moment. Like it's just copy and paste.
Wow. Well, you know, since we're kind of getting to the end of the episode anyway, and being that it's our first episode, we don't have any listener feedback. I know you've got some interesting bits of trivia that you've collected about this. Why don't you just kind of quickly go over some interesting things about this movie that people didn't know. Like, for example, the fact that 1 and 2 were filmed together. I had no idea until literally just now when he said that.
So 1 and 2 actually filmed together. But when they were considering the role for Superman, and Christopher Reeve was not at all on the radar, but Richard Donner wanted somebody that was unknown in the film world, but some other people that were considered. And Carrie, you've never heard of any of these.
No,
have
I haven't.
You, of who... Okay, so they actually considered Muhammad Ali.
I don't see him being that good an actor. Is the thing?
Okay, if this had been like 20 years later, I could have seen him playing Steel, but probably not Superman.
Yeah,
I just don't think he's got the acting chops for it. Really,
they had Al Pacino.
No.
No, 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 no.
James Caine.
James Caan.
James Caan.
Yeah, that dude. No.
Okay.
Can you tell how young I am?
That's okay. Nothing wrong with that.
Steve McQueen.
No.
A younger Clint Eastwood.
No.
No. Nope.
Dustin Hoffman.
No. No. No.
Patrick Wayne, the son of John Wayne.
I don't know him, so maybe.
I can kind of see his face, but no.
Okay, I'm going to give you two more that probably you never thought of. They actually considered Neil Diamond.
No! No! No!
Let's bring back Muhammad Ali.
And then Arnold Schwarzenegger.
So far, I want to point out that of this entire list, I think, and again, not knowing anything about Patrick Wayne, I didn't even know John Wayne had a son. So far, Muhammad Ali sounds like the best option on the list, frankly.
Yeah, there weren't a lot. But a couple other interesting things. He had to gain, but when they finally did come up, Christopher Reeve, he had to gain nearly 50 pounds in order to play the role of Superman. So that I thought that was pretty interesting. The original Perry White was replaced days before shooting because the original one that they had had a heart attack.
Oh.
He wasn't able to continue with it.
Not good.
There was almost, I found this, there was almost a musical number in Superman. Can anybody guess where they were going to put the musical number in?
Oh, please tell me it was not for the song Can You Read My Mind in the flight scene with Superman and Lois.
That's correct.
Oh my gosh.
They were,
that's horrible.
I think I she saw was, something. They,
she that, was that wanting song to has sing lyrics, it. By the way.
Right.
It's actually,
she
I
was
think it's
wanting
the
to sing that song. And she went to Richard Donner and said, hey, can I sing this?
Oh no.
And after
no,
a few
no,
times,
no.
he just said, no, we're just going to keep it like this.
I think but I she saw wanted to something sing that song. Where she actually, they actually did record her singing it. But I could be wrong.
I don't know if she's a good singer or not, but just no, it's not a musical. And honestly, the song, lyrically speaking, the song's not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, again, 1978. It's not that it's a bad song. It's just that's not a musical.
Yeah.
Nor well, did that scene need it. Like, that would have – it would have destroyed the emotional power of that scene.
Yeah.
It would have damaged it.
Oh, yeah. Well, wow. I got two more thoughts real quick. The first one is David Prowse. Anybody know who he is?
Yes.
I sure hope you would.
I've never heard of him at all. I'm kidding.
What?
That was sarcasm.
I was going to say, Carrie, I can't fire you in the first
that
episode.
That was sarcasm.
But he actually trained Christopher Reeve, but they originally would not let David Prowse do it because he was not an American actor. He was a British actor. But he ended up training Christopher Reeve for the role.
When you say you wouldn't let him do it, David, because you had mentioned this the other night when we were what were we doing the other
random
night?
Random Chatter Theater.
We were talking about it.
We were watching the Random Chatter movie theater.
That's right, Random Chatter Theater. Thank you very much. You pointed out that he was actually in consideration for the role of Superman.
Right. But because he was a British actor and they wanted an American actor, they didn't pick him up. But he ended up training Christopher Reeve for this role.
Right. Yeah, but you know, if you've heard David Prowse talk, I don't know how well he could pull off an American accent, but I don't know. I'm still thinking back to the scenes of him as Darth Vader and hearing him speak as Darth Vader and not liking it. He's a nice guy. He's a really nice guy, but he's got this more rural British accent that just I don't think comes across as what you would expect out of a superhero or out of someone who is trying to be intimidating or imposing. He's very physically imposing. He's tall. At the time, he was very muscular, you know, big guy. But, yeah.
Now, we were talking about cultural impacts, and if this next fact and this last one I've got is correct, this could have a lot of cultural impact on the current DC films that we have. And for those who know comics, I don't know, but I found that the logo for Superman's chest was actually come up with by Marlon Brando. There was no family crest in the comics.
Yeah, he had the...
Does anybody who knows more comics than I do know if that was true or not?
I think that's... It's not that he didn't have the S symbol on his chest so much. I think it might have been Marlon Brando came up with the idea of that being the family crest. Like, I think there were comic books where he had the S on his chest. Yeah, so that could have been it. Yeah, that whole thing is even newer, I think, than the idea of it being the family crest. So maybe, yeah, if Marlon Brando came up with that, that's kind of interesting.
And it never meant hope as it does today.
That's a good amount of trivia. Those are every single thing on that list is something I was not aware of. I had no idea on any of those. So,
well, yeah, that's all I've got.
So very cool. All right. Well, I think that is going to wrap it up for our first premiere episode of the Caped Chronicles. And we're in at about a little over an hour and 20 minutes. So given the 20 minute intro, that's not bad. I think we kept pretty much right on track for about an hour of talking about the movie itself. So that's good. Next week, Mike, you're kind of steering the ship with the movie lineup. So correct me if I'm wrong, but are we doing next episode, I should say, Batman by Tim Burton?
Yes. Yes. Batman by right. Tim Burton. You want to see me get nuts? Let's get nuts.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait for that one.
Oof, I know.
All right. Well, we want to hear from you guys. Let us know what you think of this new show. We really want to get your feedback. Now, you can email us. You can send it to capedchronicles@randomchatter.com. Or you know what? I'll give you a little shortcut. If you don't want to type all that out, just send it to cc@randomchatter.com. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know if there's anything that you want us to talk more about, talk less about. Just give us whatever your feedback is. We want to hear that from you. We want this show to be something that you enjoy, okay? Twitter. Our Twitter account is @CapedChronicles. We have the one for the network itself, which is @RandomChatter. My personal one is @EricBlythe. That's EricBlythe. Carrie, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me @CarrieBlackfire42. That's K-E-R-I Blackfire42.
All right. And Mike?
I actually changed my Twitter since the movie quote. You could find me @ObiMikeKenobi. @OBI_MikeKenobi. And you'll find me there on Twitter.
All right. I'm the only one that has a really crappy Twitter name. That's just awesome.
Oh, yeah.
We got to fix it eventually. I've been asking people for suggestions for years. If any of our listeners have any suggestions, please let me know. There will be a reward involved of some sort. So anyway, you can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com. If you've been with the network for a while, we have a few new shows. Of course, this obviously being one of them. But we've also got Guardians of the MCU, Fangirl Confessional. We have another secret project that we wanted to get this one fully up and running first before we do the other one. But let's just say it is also superhero related. So if you like this show, stay tuned for that one as well. Something that is very important to the success of this show, not that we wouldn't keep doing it anyway, but it's hard for a new podcast to get noticed sometimes. So we would really appreciate it if you would help spread the word about the show and help support the show. Now, one of the ways you can do that is leave us reviews. Wherever you're getting this show from, if you go and leave reviews for that show, that would be a big help. Now, a lot of you might be getting this as part of our network feed, and that's fine. And you don't have to change that. But if you have, for example, an iTunes account, and you'd be willing to go and leave a review for just this show in iTunes, then it would be a way to help get a little bit of notice for this show so that it helps other people find the show as well. And then that helps build the community for this show and for the network. And you're part of that community. So you are investing in something you're already a part of. So that's a good thing. So leave us reviews wherever you're getting the podcast from. And right now it's up in, it should be up in iTunes by the time you're hearing this. If not, it'll be up in iTunes very shortly. The network feed is up in a lot of places, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Blueberry, maybe even a couple more places. And we will have this show in all of those locations as soon as they get us approved, probably within the week. So I know Google Play is a big deal for a lot of people. If we're not there at right this second, by the time we get our next episode up, we will already be in Google Play. So look for us there. Tell your friends about us too. As you're talking to people about movies or about superhero stuff, say, hey, you know, there's this new podcast covering superhero movies. You should check it out. They're going all the way back to the beginning and then going all the way through to today. Check out the Caped Chronicles. We would also love it if you would come hang out with us in Discord. If you go to randomchatter.com/Discord, you can join for free. There's a main lobby room there, and then we've got a separate room for each one of the podcast shows. I think at last count, there were about 14 shows. There's a couple more coming soon. And we would love to talk with you. That's also a good way for you to give us feedback about the shows. But then in addition, another way you can support us is financially through Patreon. And we use Patreon because it's a way that if you do donate something, it gives us a way to give something back to you. And I just mentioned Discord. For all of the people who donate through Patreon, even if it's just $1 a month, for all of those people, we open up the entire Discord server to you. There's like an additional 50 channels or more on top of the show specific channels. So there's a lot of content in our Discord server. It's a very active server. We would love to have you be a part of that. So if you're willing to help us out, even just with $1 a month, that's something that we give back to you. We mentioned the Random Chatter Theater earlier in the show too. That's something that we give to our bonus subscribers. I think that's at the $5 and higher mark, but we're never going to require people to donate. We're never going to put the show behind a paywall of some sort. It's always going to be free. This is just something for the people who do want to help support us. We want to give something back to you as well. And then finally, the credits for the show. The music you hear in this podcast is High Roller Mojo by Blue Stolly. Blue Stolly is part of Fixed Records. That's F-I-X-T. You can go to fixt.com to find it, as well as a lot of other great music, especially the stuff by Cell Dweller and Circle of Dust. We use a lot of their music on our podcasts, so we're very happy to continue to do that. So be sure to check them out. And then finally, Asilius Sentence Sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. We appreciate you checking out this new episode of this new podcast on the network. Until next time, take care.